That first ever parliament of the Isle of Man is a combination of opposing benches facing each other and semicircles facing a chairperson. Its parliamentary architecture may be kind of a trivia question wrapped in a trivia question, but it's one of the five styles found in all 193 UN member states. David Mulder van der Vecke and his architect partner Max Cohen de Lera first began thinking about how physical spaces can influence politics in 2010. Since then, the two have chronicled and examined the design of all UN member states, parliaments, and visited 15 parliaments around the world in an attempt to understand how architecture, the way politicians sit and face each other, the design of the room, affects the tone of political discussion. Their book, Parliament, is out this month, and David says it began with a question about Dutch politics.
This research in particular started in 2010 when we were watching television and they showed, coincidentally just after each other, two fragments of political debates. One was taking place in the Dutch House of Parliament that is organized in a semicircular shape with members of parliament in large revolving chairs. And the other debate was taking place in the British House of Commons that is organized with members of parliament sitting opposite each other in a very small space. And the kind of atmosphere between these two debates was totally different, whereas in the Dutch parliament there was a kind of a calm, a little bit boring atmosphere. The debate in the British House of Parliament was extremely intense and confrontational. And that made us think about the relationship between the space in which this debate takes place and, let's say, the kind of atmosphere of the debate. So in that sense, we could say that a parliament is, on one hand, the expression of a political culture, but at the same time, it also gives shape to that culture.
Well, there's a little bit of a chicken and egg issue here. I mean, is it possible that the Brits made a space that was perfectly suited for them screaming at each other?
You're right, in the sense that, of course, there is a relationship between, on one hand, the architecture, and on the other hand, what is taking place there. So you can imagine it's even like with a smaller conversation you're having yourself, that the type of setting sort of affects the type of conversation. But the British House of Commons, for example, particularly dates back to the 12th century, to the nave of St. Stephen's Chapel, where the king was consulting noblemen, clergy, and other aristocracy. And that was, in fact, the first parliament. So it was not so much designed as a democratic space, interestingly, but as a royal court. And until today, still the setup of a royal court is the setup for the House of Commons. So I would argue that the House of Commons is, in fact, not so much of a democratic space, leave alone like a parliamentarian space.
That's fascinating. I mean, I love this history. I mean, you can go back to the Parthenon and the Acropolis and all of the models for democracy that relate to classical times. But how much variation did you find among the 193 member states that you studied and the 15 parliaments that you visited?
That was actually one of the shocking discoveries in the research. Although all these 193 parliaments think that they are a kind of unique expression of national identity, when you look beyond the immediate appearance, in fact, what you find is that there are only five typologies, as we call them in architectures, let's say archetypes. One is something we already talked about, the House of Commons, which are two rows of opposing benches. The second one is the semicircle that refers back to Roman and Greek antiquity, the theaters. Most parliaments in 19th century Europe are organized in this kind of semicircular setup. A third one is a sort of a hybrid between the opposing benches and the semicircle. So you have opposing benches that in one part of the room bend towards each other and start to form a horseshoe. A fourth one, which is more of a rare one, is a circle. And a fifth one is what we call a classroom, which is a room organized in long consecutive rows where all members of parliament are facing one speaker up front. And this typology is particularly popular among non-democratic regimes. So, for example, the room of Russian Duma, North Korea, China, they're all in this classroom setting.
That's so interesting. How does the U.S. fare? I mean, are we a standard archetype? Are we an exemplary architectural example of facilitating democracy? Or do you think the Capitol building gets in the way?
Well, I think, well, first of all, like the U.S. is organized in a semicircle, but in a rectangular space. That's kind of particular. Japan also has a sort of a similar setting. But I think what is more important is how most of these five typologies that I mentioned were invented in the 19th century and have hardly changed ever since. So while the world has changed tremendously, these parliaments are responding to that different world from a kind of 19th century interiors.
If you were to design a 21st century parliament which relied on the most advanced technology, would you invent a new typology or would you stick to one of the old ones? How do you think the future of democracy is going to require new thinking as far as architecture is concerned?
When thinking about a new parliament, you obviously also need to think about the culture in which that parliament is being placed. So it's difficult to speak about a parliament as sort of an abstract, perfect setting that works in any kind of context. But in general, I think there are a number of, let's say, themes you need to address when thinking about a parliament today. And one is, of course, media, like the public eye looking at parliaments in a much more omnipresent way than when parliaments were invented in the 19th century. And an important aspect of that is that people looking at parliaments need to be able to understand what's going on in a parliament. So one idea that I think is worth to sort of experiment with are parliaments in which the seating arrangement can be changed according to the type of debate. So for example, for a more confrontational debate, a sort of opposing benches as in the British House of Commons would work perfectly well. Whereas for other debates where the aim is to try to foster consensus, a semicircular setting would probably be a better idea. Another element I think that is worth to consider is the increasing impact of particularly social media. Nowadays, members of parliament, at least in the Netherlands, are in direct contact with their electorate through, for example, Twitter or other forms of social media. And to think like how this feedback loop can be not in a sort of banal way by a Twitter fountain, but like on a more profound level, can have a more important role within also, let's say, how the debate is taking place within the room. Because in a way, architecture sets the stage for our lives. Politics is one of the domains architecture can also have an impact.
David Mulder van der Vet, thank you very much.
Thank you.
David Mulder van der Vet is the co-founder of the architectural firm XML. He's also the co-author of the book Parliament, with his partner, Max Cohen-DeLara.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.